the deer and the antelope play.
Hello, dear friends. This is John Charles Thomas. Well, here we are again with another half hour of song, story, and music for you men and women in the armed forces of the United Nations. For story, we have John Nesbitt, one of America's best. For music, there's Victor Young in the orchestra. And for song, the Ken Darby Chorus and myself. And now, Vic, with the preliminaries over, let's get started.
The ballad is a form of music that always has been widely popular and I guess always will be. Here's a grand one. Wilfred Sanderson's Until.
Contemporary writers have been influenced by the Norwegian composer Edvard Grieg, especially by many of his original harmonic effects. He always wrote beautiful music, and the composition Vic Young has chosen to play for you now is no exception. Romance.
Thank you.
The opera Le Roi de Lahore was written by the great French composer Massenet and produced in 1877. One of the fine arias in it is Promesse de mon avenir. I shall sing it for you now.
Ô troupe du sultan, qui menace Lahore, la royale cité, notre puissance redoutable encore. Chassait une invisible main, elle donne du désir gagner le chemin. Le peuple est rassuré, c'est mon nom qui l'acclame.
Thank you.
Ken Darby's arrangement of Among My Souvenirs, and that epic of the days of motor veils, linen dusters, goggles, and gauntlets, Get Out and Get Under.
Johnny O'Connor bought an automobile. He took his sweetie for a ride on Sunday. Things were just dandy till he got down the road. Then his machinery broke down. Bang! He'd have to get under, get out and get under to fix his little machine. He was just dying to cuddle his queen. But every minute when he'd begin it, he'd have to get under, get out and get under. Then he'd get back at the wheel. A dozen times they'd start to hug and kiss, and then the darn old engine, it would miss, and then he'd have to get under, get out and get under, and pick up his automobile. Time goes on and on, those old days are gone. There's nothing left for me of things that you.
This is John Charles Thomas, and here is our storyteller, John Nesbitt.
I wish to describe a man to you, to describe him so exactly that you would know him without doubt should you meet him. Because this man is one of America's greatest and most terrible enemies, an enemy that no gun or plane or atomic bomb will ever wipe out. He is a fellow with broad shoulders and big hands calloused with work. His cheeks are black hollows, his skin is yellow and withered like a mummy's, and is stretched across the bones as taut as a drumhead. If you look at him closely, you will see somewhere on his thin and sick body a curious blotch of red that is shaped oddly like a butterfly. He was first recognized in America in 1907. On every road, in every farm, in every village of the poorer sections of the country, you saw him stumbling up to the door of his shack, hopeless and despairing, and while others around him watched and whispered, "Look, the mark of the butterfly." In 1914, the government sent down a man from Washington to see what could be done. He was a tall, thin, stoop-shouldered doctor whose name was Joseph Goldberger. And he was one of those dead, serious fellows who never gets the point of a joke, who seldom laughs, whose whole life is work, constant work. And everywhere he went, he saw these walking mummies, men and women and children, white and black. It made no difference what color you were, the butterfly could strike anyone. And month after month, this serious government fellow, this plugger, searched for the cause, his eyes growing red and half-blind from sitting all night reading through the medical reports for a clue, and noting theories about germs that he never could find. And day after day, the people came to him, hollow-eyed. "You found the cure yet, Doc?" And the government man, looking away to hide his own feelings, replying, no, not just yet. And he did a great deal of his work now in an orphanage. For there, out of the entire number of children past their infancy, only three had escaped the disease. That alone was a blank mystery in itself. How could three children, living constantly with the infected ones, escape it? By what miracle of nature did that occur? But there was no answer. And one night, very late, as Goldberger was working in his room at the orphanage, he heard a sound in the hall, and opening the door, he peeked out, and then he grinned. Three youngsters sneaking into the kitchen to raid the icebox for a bottle of milk that was meant for the infants. Goldberger loved children, and he felt that a little juvenile raid on an icebox wasn't his business. So he went back to his little room, still smiling. And suddenly that smile faded, and a vague memory stirred in his brain. The faces of these three children, did they hold something that you couldn't find in any medical theory ever advanced? He rushed back to the door. He stood in the dark watching those children. Night after night he watched. Night after night the same three little imps skipped into the kitchen. A trivial seeming incident, and yet it is actually one of the lighthouse towers that mark the course of 5,000 years of history. For the three children were the same ones who alone of all in the orphanage were immune to the dread mark of the butterfly. Could something as simple as ordinary milk be the clue? Yes, it was as simple as that. The cause of the butterfly disease, which doctors called pellagra, is ridiculously simple, a lack of what we now call the vitamin B2 complex. And the cure was as simple as the cause, for it was just food, that is, proper food. A varied diet such as milk and eggs and fresh lean beef and whole wheat bread and green vegetables. For pellagra is the disease of hungry men, yet men with full stomachs, but starving nonetheless with the hidden hunger that leaves the mark of the butterfly. It stunned us when we found it here. Stunned us that in abundant America there should be people ill-fed and undernourished. For while poverty is always an underlying cause of pellagra, there was also the tragic fact that the disease was commonest among farmers, people who could easily have raised the right foods, but through a lack of knowledge, they raised foods on which they literally starved to death with the hidden hunger of vitamin deficiency. Whole centuries of that, just waiting for our humble, solemn government man to come walking down a country road. We city dwellers know about these things only vaguely, perhaps. But something is now being done about it, and logically it's being done on the land, that is, on the farms. Every year at this time, you may find in the newspapers pictures of clean and bright-eyed farm kids, boys and girls, and these youngsters are winners of 4-H Club health scorings, which are being held now as part of the National 4-H Club Congress in Chicago. In 1944, one of the winners was Lyle Ramey of Redwood Falls, Minnesota. Starting in 4-H work 7 years ago, Lyle, who's now 16, has by himself conducted projects in raising poultry and pork and gardening and dairying and junior leadership and health. A farmer beginning at the age of 10. For his efforts, this boy, who's now 16 years old, has won national honors in 4-H work. The idea back of these competitions is a very great one. It is to encourage our young people to stay on the farms, for they will become the strong fathers of our future generations. And what could be more important, for it is these youngsters in overalls who will carry on the battle against world hunger, the war against starvation, and all the bitter human tragedies that follow, of which the grim and terrible mark of the butterfly is only one. And whenever the peace delegates meet around polished tables to try to plan a more intelligently operated world, the yellowed ghost of the stumbling and walking mummy of a man bearing the mark of the butterfly, who needs only food, will always be standing behind their chairs, wondering if this time they will think of him as they lay out their great and hopeful plans for the future of Earth's passing parade.
Italians have all sorts of jokes to tell about the laziness of the composer Rossini. Maybe that's what influenced the brevity of the Little March Vic Young plays next. However, I think you'll find it charming.
Let's have some fun with the old nursery rhyme, Sing a Song of Sixpence. Sing a song of sixpence, a pocket full of rye. 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. When the pie was opened, the birds began to sing. Wasn't that a pretty dish to set before the king? The king! The king was in his counting hall. One, two. Counting out his money, the queen was in the parlor eating. Bread and honey to the maid was in the garden hanging out the clothes. Went down came a blackbird and pecked off her nose. Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land. I am weak, but thou art mighty. Hold me with thy powerful hand.
Bread of heaven, feed me till I want no more.
Bread of heaven, feed me till I want no more.
Open now thy crystal fountain, where the healing waters flow. Let the fiery, cloudy pillar lead me on my journey through. Strong deliverer, be thou still my strength and shield.
Strong deliverer, be thou still my strength and shield. When I tread the verge of Jordan, bid my anxious tears subside. Bear me through the swelling flood. Land me safe on Canaan's side.
Songs of praise.
dear friends, we've sung our last song until our next visit with you 1 week from now. You know, Vic and Ken and I especially enjoy getting letters from you servicemen and women, and if you have a song or musical selection you would like to hear, just drop us a line. We'll do our best to oblige. Address your letters to Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. So until next week at this same time, this is John Charles Thomas saying goodbye. God bless.
Jane Whitman speaking. This rebroadcast of the John Charles Thomas Show has been a presentation of the Armed Forces Radio Service.